Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com.
And welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. This is Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie Larson, who I believe is out somewhere having a good time. Isn't that just like her? But I'm delighted to be in studio today. And our guest today is a gentleman who is a friend of mine who works with kids, students. And we're going to get to him in just a minute. His name is Duffy Robbins. I don't know if that's his real name. I think his real name is Sebastian. But I'm not sure. I just made that up. We'll find out for sure. But today is the 42nd anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision, and there was a big march today on the state capitol with Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. And the director is on the line. We're just going to say hi to him, Bill Paler, and get an update on how it went today. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing really well, but I'm not the director. I'm the communications director.
Well, that's the same thing, but, you know, it's director, communications director. So how did it go today?
Oh, it was great. The weather was perfect. It was sunny, warm, and people came out, several thousand, to speak up for life and march, and it was just a fantastic day.
And there's been like 600,000 abortions in the state of Minnesota since in the last 40 years?
Yeah, that's the sad reality, and that's why we keep coming year after year, because abortions continue to be performed in this state and around the country. So we need to keep pressing our state and federal lawmakers to do the right thing and pass laws that protect life.
We always have to have that on the front of our mind, don't we? We always have to be thinking about the most vulnerable of all, the ones in the womb.
Yeah, we do. It's truly the human rights issue of our day. More people die every year from abortion in Minnesota than from any other single cause.
It's just unbelievable. I really appreciate what you do, and what kind of turnout did they have today at the Capitol?
I think we had 4,000 people there. It was just great. You know, it's a great thing for people to come out. We had lots of families, young people, college students, and everyone was excited to be there and to do their part to protect human life.
Great. Well, we will certainly keep in our prayers the MCCL, and I appreciate all you do, and thank you for giving us an update on what happened today at the state capitol. It's a big deal.
And thanks so much, Bill.
Yeah, appreciate the update. Thanks so much. All right, so our guest today, Duffy Robbins, he has been involved in youth ministry for 35 years, and he's a very popular speaker to kids, and he speaks to tens and tens of kids every year. He's married to Maggie, has two daughters. I know he enjoys breakfast most mornings, and he's possibly allergic to gluten, from what I can remember. He has several degrees, neither of which really impress me, although the one allows him to make a dinner reservation using the name Dr. Robbins. And depending on where they're eating, he also uses the name Captain Sparky. But if you spend any time with Duffy, you'll quickly come to understand why he got beat up a lot as a kid. And even to this day, many of his friends on occasion think about taking a swing at him. But in high school, I know he was voted most likely to be voted something in high school. And he's been the author of over 15 books and hundreds of articles. His titles include Ministry of Nurture, A Guide to Building Teenage Disciples, Everyday Object Lessons, Youth Ministry Nuts and Bolts, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on. Welcome to the show, Duffy.
Oh, my gosh.
That's an exhausting introduction.
Have time left?
Yeah, just an hour.
I just close in prayer.
We have a whole hour left.
That was funny. I mean, that was a good introduction.
I figured that was one you'd appreciate.
Yeah, no, thanks for letting me come on the show today, and thank you to Susie Larson for leaving the inmates in charge.
Yeah,
you're
trying to get back at me. I can see that already. We want to talk about youth ministry today. We also want to talk about what's going on with kids today in ministry, and we want them to be devoted disciples of Christ, not just go to a youth group to be entertained, right?
Right.
Okay. I remember in the 70s when I was a student and we had Monday night Bible study, and I would walk into a basement in a home that had 60 kids in it, and the guy that was leading the Bible study would literally come in, say, "Hi, everyone," and he'd open his Bible and say, let's turn to John chapter 4. There were no games, there were no icebreakers, there were no anything, no songs. We just studied God's Word, and I loved it. It's really not that way anymore, is it, with kids?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, it is with some kids.
Mm-hmm.
And
don't contradict me, Duffy, ever.
Well,
seriously.
I mean, you know, someone could hear what you said and say, yes, and look at Bill Arnold now. But so let's choose a different approach. But
okay.
No, you know what? You're right that there is, I think maybe there was a little bit, people were more compliant. Kids are more willing, you know, to show up for stuff like that. But even then, and I was a teenager, you know, about the same time you were, and I didn't walk into, you know, to a Bible study, and I wouldn't have. I mean, if somebody had come over to my school and passed out flyers, you know, John 4, you know, Sally's basement, be there, be square. We, you know, they wouldn't have drawn flies. I mean, that just wasn't in my worldview. Now, I grew up in the church. I mean, I wasn't an avid attender, but I mean, I was closer to the church than a lot, you know, than maybe some people. But even so, I didn't consider myself seriously a Christian. And so I probably wouldn't have been there. So the good thing about your group is that the kids who were there were really being nurtured in the Word.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. That's important. And I applaud that. The good thing about the ministry that appealed to a guy like me is that it actually got me close enough so that I could get within reach, and then they could embrace me. And when I got within reach, I could actually hear them enough to maybe over time listen to what they had to say about Jesus and in John 4. But so I don't think you can. It's not an either or, and I still think we need both elements of youth ministry. There's got to be that element that reaches out to the kid who's not interested, because there are a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's got to be something that happens once they've been reached. And that is a problem that I think, you know, somewhere in there, we so lauded the idea of having a big youth group. You know, if you're around a group of you know, pastors or youth workers, you know, there inevitably numbers conversations come up, and you know, we had 20 kids last week, you know, and now this week we had 30, and you know, then the next week we had 40, and then 50, and we're meeting in the civic center, and never mind, you know, that we're giving the kids free beer. I mean, the idea is, let's just get as many people
right
in the basement.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's your, you know, that's your concern, is that having all those people doesn't amount to much, and that's true.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if there's not something to draw them, then once the current group of Christians graduates, then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a both and, I think.
You know, Duffy, you and I have been friends for a long time, and I, to be honest, I don't know your faith journey and what brought you to Christ. Would you share that story while I feign interest?
Say, well, you go to the bathroom or something.
Doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah,
just go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the church. And I think, you know, my mom and dad were awesome people. They were just amazing. And they really, really were obedient to, I think, to what they heard in church and what they thought they heard in church and stuff. And so they were fantastic. It wasn't until, I guess, my junior year of high school that I was working in radio and as a newscaster. I had this job as a kid. It was kind of unique, where I'd go on the air every night and do the radio. And anyway, this girl invited me to go to this retreat that I wasn't really supposed to go to. It was actually a retreat for the guys like you, who went to the Bible study. It was with a group called Young Life, which
mm-hmm.
you probably know.
Oh, yeah.
And this was their campaigners ministry, which is kind of for the kids who are willing to go a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't even at that point really willing to go shallow. But anywhere this young woman went, I was willing to go there.
Mm.
And so that's how I went on that retreat. It was this dumpy little retreat center in South Carolina. And to my utter shock, it kind of sort of made sense to me. And also I began to see people my age who actually were interested in God. And so that really did make an impression on me. I always consider that kind of the conception, I guess, the point of conception for my rebirth. And then in that next fall, when all of my buddies were going away to college, I guess it was my senior year of high school, when all my buddies were going away to college, I stayed in Charlotte so I could stay at this job at the radio station, because that's what I wanted to do, is broadcast journalism, and I already had this great gig. So I stayed there, and because of my, well, I don't know if this is true, but I think partially because of my name recognition in Charlotte, because every kid in town listened to our rock and roll station every night, and so they knew my name. I think Young Life kind of said, "Hey, let's continue to reach out to this guy and let's get him to come to club." And so I did, and began to befriend those people. Really, they befriended me. I mean, and that's when I began to kind of see something in them that I knew I didn't have. And so about Thanksgiving of my freshman year in college, I was at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. We had a Thanksgiving weekend retreat for our Young Life kids, and a place called it was a place called Wanata in South Carolina. And that weekend I read this little booklet by Robert Boyd Munger. Some of your listeners would know this book. It's called My Heart, Christ's Home. And that book really, it just hit me. I realized, yeah, that's me. I don't know the Lord, and I've invited Jesus, maybe if anything, into a guest room. But that little booklet began to change everything, and it was that weekend that I became a Christian. So it was kind of like a gestation process that began on that weekend in April of my senior year, and then culminated with new birth in Thanksgiving of my freshman year of college, and that's kind of how it all happened. And I stayed working with Young Life on student staff and kind of learned a lot about ministry and about how to reach kids like me. That's what Young Life does, I think, so well. But then I started to get involved with this music ministry called New Directions, which is also in North Carolina. And I loved music, and I used to play drums in a rock and roll band, and so I was intrigued that they were using music to do ministry. And so about my sophomore or junior year of college, I got involved with those guys and continued to work with them even through college graduation, even through seminary, and then I worked for them a couple of years after that. But that was where I really felt like I got discipled. There was a guy who still lives in North Carolina, J.L. Williams, and J.L. and his wife Pat really discipled me and Maggie, and they really emphasized the importance of reading, and that really pushed me to go deeper and further, and so that was a huge step in my walk with the Lord. And by this time, Bill, you're not even really feigning interest anymore.
No, I'm so checked out. Seriously. I'm doing a Sudoku.
And you know, to be truthful, I'm not as interested as I wish.
I'm doing a Sudoku puzzle right now, and I'm so close to finishing it. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to have lots more with Duffy Robbins. Stay tuned. You're listening to Live the Promise with Susie Larson, but she's not here today. It's Bill Arnold sitting in for her. Be back in just a minute.
Let them see you in me. Let them hear.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson. I usually host a show Sundays at 5 called Real Recovery with George Fraser. So it's nice to be here in the studio during the week. There's much more adult supervision here this time of day. We're talking today to Duffy Robbins. Duffy is a youth worker extraordinaire. He trains youth workers. He loves kids and everything about them. He's written a bunch of books, tons of articles, none of which I've read lately, but that doesn't matter, Duff, does it?
Well, it kind of does, but that's okay.
I'm just the host of the show. I mean, but seriously,
right.
Let's talk about Ministry of Nurture. And if you have a call, if you have a question for Duffy, because you've got a teenager and you've got questions, and you know, what are some of the barriers that are getting in the way of your teen getting involved in the youth ministry? Maybe you have a question for him. He may or may not be able to answer it, but that's kind of half the fun of the show. So you can give us a call at 1-877-933-2484 with any questions you have for Duffy. So, Duffy, talk a little bit about your book, Ministry of Nurture, A Guide to Building Teenage Disciples.
Ministry of Nurture. Yes. Well, that book, it basically asks two questions. First of all, what does a teenage disciple look like? And I like to think that they are bald. No, I like to, but, you know, teenage disciple, I mean, because you do sort of, what, you know, there's sort of the stereotype, I guess, of they, like you said, go to youth group, you know, they memorize Bible verses, and they, you know, are there every week for church, and maybe on a quizzing team or something like that. And it's funny, one of the ways that I try to pose that question in the book is by listing a range of traits. For example, you know, a real familiarity, a real deep knowledge of the scripture, or you know, really enjoys public prayer, or zealous and active in their stand for God, or fast regularly, and there's about 10 different traits in the book, and I think most people, you know, when they read to that list of traits, yeah, you know, that's kind of what we think of, but what's interesting is I actually compiled that list by going through the Gospels, but I didn't study the disciples, I actually studied the Pharisees. You remember the Pharisees, Bill?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, okay. They were the nice folks that killed Jesus, and and all of these traits that I just mentioned that seem very religious and very good, they did all of those things. And so the point I want to make is that whatever it means to be a real life disciple of Jesus, it must mean more than that, and we got to kind of figure out, well, what is that? What does it actually mean? Because then we want to. This is the second question: how do we nurture those traits in the lives of our young people, if they're, you know, if they're our children or if they're in our youth group? So, what are the traits of a real life teenage disciple? And then, how do we nurture those traits in them? And so, that's basically the idea behind that book. And in the book, I try to identify five different traits. I bet you'd like to hear them.
Yeah, time permitting. Go ahead.
Well, okay. The first one is they own their own faith. They own their own faith. And I don't know how much time we have. I think it, maybe even after you go off the air, if you want to just continue talking.
I really don't,
we
but
can
anyway.
But that
won't happen. But.
When I was a kid, I used to travel with my family a lot. We did a lot of trips. And whenever we'd go away, you know, Mom would come into mine and my brother's bedroom to pack our bag for us, because she knew that if she didn't, we'd have, you know, we wouldn't have a lot of stuff we really needed that she felt we needed. And so, you know, I didn't make a big deal about it. I didn't mind her doing that. The thing is, you know, my mom, like most moms, she did often pack stuff that I knew I was not going to wear. And, you know, like, I don't know if your mom did this, but, like, she bought for me and my brother a lot of matching clothes. It's not funny, Bill.
Well, you got beat up a lot.
I'm kind of trying to share some important stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm laughing.
So, you know, and then the other thing was, my mom was a kindergarten teacher. This is a true story. She was a kindergarten teacher, and so she was very creative. And so, for example, when you gave her clothing to mend, she wouldn't just mend it. She would sort of make it creative. She'd sort of do cool, you know, what she thought was kind of zany things with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a pair of shorts, one of my favorite pairs of shorts that I loved, but it got a rip in the left thigh, you know, I guess just the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Mom mended it, but when she gave it back to me, instead of just sewing it up, in big red block letters on my leg, it kind of an arch, it said, "Howdy." like, you know, like that's going to help me make friends. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, like I see a group of guys go, hey, guys, you know, and then point to my thigh. Well, so, I mean, mom packed stuff that I knew I wasn't going to, you know, want to have in there. But I didn't really complain because mom, well, I never had to carry my bag. I was the baby of the family. So my, you know, my dad carried his bag and my mom carried her bag. Big brother carried his bag. I carried my coloring book and to this day, actually, when I travel, I would never complain about it until one day. Don't worry, there's only five of these, it won't take long. But one day we were going to go away. I was going to go by myself to camp, and mom came in and started, you know, throw all this stuff in the bag, and I just said, no, mom, I'm not taking it, you know. And it was scary, you know. I didn't know how she was going to respond. And my mom was a great mom. I've already said that. But when she was mad at us, you know, she would comb her hair. And I remember just kind of waiting and waiting for her to get the brush. And finally, she said, "Okay, you don't have to take these, you know, the shorts and stuff. But if you don't have something you need, it'll be your responsibility." And so when I left the house that day, it was kind of like a defining moment because I knew I was gonna have to carry what was ever in that bag. And I think what happens to a lot of teenagers, guys, even like yourself, you grow up in the church, and it happened to me, it just happened a little bit later, where you kind of have the church pack your faith bags for you. You know, we need this, don't forget that, stuff this in there. Remember this doctrine, you know, get that Bible verse in there. And it's fine as long as you're a kid and somebody else is carrying it for you. But there comes a point at which, you know, maybe you're 14 or 15 or 16, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have seen this with their own children, where these kids kind of woke up one day and asked themselves, why am I carrying this stuff around? It's heavy. You know, it's awkward when I walk through the hallways at school. This bag comes between me and my buddies on Friday night, and it kind of makes it hard to you know, get to my girlfriend on Saturday night. This is between us, and so what they do is they start taking stuff out of the bag, and it's not, you know, it's not like they're going, I don't believe in God. They're going, no, I still believe in God. I just don't think you have to believe this. And so that gets jettisoned. And I really am a Christian, everything. I still want to be a Christian. I just don't think you have to, I don't buy that. And then another thing gets tossed, and then another thing gets tossed. And by the time you kind of graduate from high school, you graduate from youth group. And for all practical purposes, a lot of our young people just kind of graduate from God. And they're still walking around with a bag that says Christianity on it. It's just that the bag is empty.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the elements of real-life discipleship in a teenager is to help them to own their own faith. And I won't take time to do all that, but that's basically the idea that as parents, I want to entertain questions. When a kid says, why is this in my bag? Why do we have to believe this? Why is this important?
Yeah.
I don't want to say, you know, stuff it in the bag or shut up or keep carrying it. That's a really, really important question.
Yeah. Well, I wish these stories were 30% more interesting.
Or maybe 30% shorter.
I'll take either. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to have lots more with Duffy Robbins. Thanks for listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie Larson. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. This is Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie Larson, who's out working somewhere else, I think. Anyway, we're glad you joined us today. We're talking to Duffy Robbins. We're talking about youth ministry. We're talking about some of the barriers that get in the way of a teen accepting Christ or getting involved in the youth ministry program at their church. And Duffy, you've started off strong, and I say that with some reluctance, because you talked about kids owning their own faith and starting with this bag that we personally as parents fill that bag with information about what doctrine to have, what verse to include, and that as you go on with your teenage life, you start taking stuff out of the bag because it doesn't work for you, it doesn't fit. And I thought that was an interesting point. And I don't know if you've got anything else interesting to say, but I'm dying to hear what's next.
And it's not just parents. I mean, it's the church, and sometimes the church more than the parents. But, yeah, I mean, and again, part of it is just, there's nothing. It's great that it's great that your youth group, you know, have those Bible studies and that parents do, the old word is catechize. I mean, that's a great thing. It's just that we need to recognize that as teenagers begin to move into, you know, more abstract kinds of thinking, where they're asking why and who says and how do we know, and that they're going to start to want to dip into this bag and go, this thing is really heavy. Why am I carrying it around? Another element of, I think, of real-life discipleship is real-life disciples have a durable faith. And the way I explain this in the book is trying to think about it in terms of Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 13, I think it's right, verse 7 or 8, where he talks about, when I was a child, I thought like a child and I spoke like a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. That part of what we want to do is to help people become mature. And that means putting away childish notions about God and childish notions about how we make life choices. And as soon as somebody hears this, they go, well, wait a minute, I thought you're supposed to have a childlike faith. And that's true, but there's a big distinction, I think, between a childlike faith and a childish faith. I was speaking at this big youth deal at Ocean City, Maryland a few years ago, and it was a Youth for Christ event, and it was after the Saturday night session. And everybody's down the lobby there, you know, probably 1,500, 1,700 high school kids. And this is free time. So some of them are just knocking around in the pool. Some of them are just hanging out and talking. But some of the groups are actually having small groups, you know, talking and processing the day. And so this leader walks up to me, and I can see that she's concerned. I mean, she's got the furrowed brow and just the deer in the headlights. And she said, Duffy, I need your help. My group is meeting right now, and they're in a big discussion about what it means to be committed to Jesus and about your talk tonight. And there was a big argument. And so I asked him if you would – I said, I'll be ask Duffy's willing to come up and, you know, answer questions and talk with you guys. And so she said, I'm here to see if you'd be willing to come to our meeting room and talk with us. And I said, sure. I said, you know, let me finish my cigarette and I'll be interested. But I go up there, and when I get up there, if you've ever done youth ministry, you've been in a setting. It's like wall-to-wall adolescence. Just this room is just jam-packed. And on the bed to my left, there are two girls. And one of them has obviously been crying. I mean, her face is kind of red and puffy, and the youth leader gestured to her and said, okay, Shelly, you know, tell Duffy what you told us. And so I look over, and this girl, Shelly, goes, okay, when you were doing your talk, like, I don't like it. And so, like, it was like really, I don't know, like really legalistic. And I said, well, could you put that in the form of a question? And she goes, well, yeah. I mean, she said, I don't see why we have to do such a big deal of why you talk so much about commitment. I mean, God loves us and the way we are. And I said, Shelly, you know, what do you think it means to be a Christian? And she goes, like, okay, like, oh my gosh, okay, like, God loves me and like he cares about me, like he's my abbot daddy, and it was good. You know, she kind of went on for a couple minutes, and it was actually a great question that she asked, and she was trying to kind of wrestle with it. But basically, when I answered her, I took a line from C.S. Lewis. I said, I think, Shelley, the problem is you don't really want God to be your father in heaven. You want God to be your grandfather in heaven. You kind of want God to be this senile old guy who's almost able to sit up straight on the throne, and he sees us down here sinning, you know, and he's like, "You rascal, you know, you know, fornicator, you know," and like God's big plan for the universe is that at the end of the day, everybody seemed to have a swell time. I said that's not the way God reveals Himself in Scripture. He cares about our lives because He loves us. In other words, it's not He loves us, therefore He doesn't care. It's He cares, therefore He loves, therefore He cares greatly. And but you could just see what she had bought into, and perhaps had been sold by her church or her youth group or somebody, or maybe her parents, was sort of this nice, neat little childish Christianity, right? Sort of, you know, Curious George goes to the Holy Land. It was harmless. It was safe. It was kind of a flannel graph faith, and real life teenage discipleship requires that we put that away. That's the kind of childish thinking that must be put away if we're going to grow into maturity. And in Ephesians chapter 4, from verse 11 to verse 15, that's basically what Paul says is the mission of the church, to help people grow into maturity, into the fullness of personhood, into the likeness of Christ. And so if in our churches, in our youth groups, we're not doing that, then we might be having a whale of a time, but we're not meeting our mission objectives.
Mm-hmm. You know, Duffy, a lot of youth speakers use humor. How have you managed to get around that one?
That's good. That's good.
let me segue into maybe an easier question. What about the parents that might be listening today? And if you have a question for Duffy, certainly feel free to give us a call, 1-877-933-2484.
Bill, nobody's going to call.
that's my fear, is nobody's going to call.
I mean, that ain't going to happen, but go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, if someone would save me, someone talk to Duffy besides me, anybody. Anyway.
I might be able to reach another line in my house and call in.
Have Maggie call us in, something, yeah. Anyway.
Well, she stopped listening about 20 minutes.
Okay. But there's parents out there who know that their teens just aren't listening to them. And they would actually probably be more willing to talk to their peers than their parents. And the parents are dying because the parents have truth and they know and love them more than anybody. And so help us to bridge the gap between how parents can be more effective speaking to their kids and getting their attention.
Well, you're right. I mean, and that's heartbreaking. I mean, because you love these human beings so much that are your offspring. And then part of what seems to be happening is they sort of disengage, you know, that little kid that used to love family nights, you know, now doesn't want to do family nights, and used to love family vacation, doesn't want to go on family vacation, they want to be with their friends, and, you know, used to walk with you at the mall, and now they're like 20 feet behind you and until you get to the counter at Abercrombie, and then they step up. But it's hard. It really is hard. I think there's more than I can answer in this time. But a couple of things I think are important. One is that I do think parents will probably recognize that there's a point at which their actions are just going to speak a lot louder than their words, and that's a cliche, but it's just true. I mean, I think one of the basic laws of learning, it's called the law of the teacher. The teacher must know that which he or she would teach. And the first question that any of us ask of someone who's trying to communicate an idea to us is, does this person really understand that idea themselves? You know, it's like when Maggie and I were getting our premarital counseling, we had to meet with the rector of her congregation on four occasions. And
is that on DVD? I'd like to see that.
That is awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it is actually, but we have the DVD and it's
okay.
Not. Anyway, so in the last session, the fourth and final session, we're near the end of the session and he's kind of wrapping things up, you know, just kind of, you know, making some comments of closure, you know, won't be long of a big day. And, you know, Maggie, you're a very, very fortunate young woman. And then he says this, I'm going to tell you this now. I want to tell our board tonight, but I feel like you guys deserve to hear this first. But he said, my wife and I have decided to get a divorce. Now,
wow.
Again, that doesn't mean that what he told us was wrong, right? It just means that our willingness to kind of heed it is severely undercut, and because it's that old thing, nobody wants to learn navigation from the captain of the Titanic. You're not going to have Miley Cyrus speak at your True Love Waits rally. You kind of recognize that way louder than your words is your life, and so that's the first thing that I would recall to parents is that is your first responsibility is to model. I mean, and mine too. I mean, and I'm saying it's easy. We can't do it without Jesus, but to model the love of the Father, and ultimately that is just going to be a lot more persuasive. But I also think part of it is that when I do seminars for parents, there's a kind of a proverb that I like to talk about. It says that rules without relationships lead to rebellion. And what happens, I think, with a lot of parents is, and in youth groups as well, is we want to kind of levy these rules and stuff. But without relationships, that's just gonna cause a problem. I think one of the most central words in the gospel is the word incarnation. That God became flesh. He fleshed out His love. He came and lived among us. I recall teaching my oldest daughter to drive a motor vehicle. It was one of the scariest parts of our journey together, and. She's a very bright young woman, but she would, I mean, the first time we got in the car, it was just speed and sharp turns and quick stops. And of course she gets this from her mother. And the other thing, I had a policy with my girls where you may disagree with this, or some of your listeners may think this is crazy, but I had a policy where I said, you're going to have to learn to drive with a stick. If you want to drive a family car, you're going to have to learn to drive with a stick and a clutch. That I'm never going to buy an automatic transmission. But that way, you can always get home to me, no matter where you are, what kind of car you have or are with. And that was a problem because she wasn't able to grasp the dialogue that takes place between the clutch and the accelerator in a standard transmission automobile. And so every time we'd start to move forward at the intersection, it'd be just a series of severe, blows to the back and upper body. And, sometimes she'd look over at me and go, Daddy, how come when I'm driving, you can't control your saliva? And I was trying to be brave. One of my favorite comments of all time that she ever made was, are you okay, Daddy? And I go, yeah, don't worry, sweetheart. It's just a bloody nose. But these driving lessons were hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember coming back to the house and Maggie would meet us at the door and she would sort of, she'd go, don't forget why you're doing this. Don't forget why you're doing this. And I wanted to say, because you won't do this, but she was reminding me of something really important. She was reminding me that my daughter's not going to learn this stuff about the road. She's not going to learn how to make the journey safely by just sitting in a driver's ed class. She's not going to get it by watching scary movies. She's not going to get it by watching the owner's manual. That if I really want her to understand this stuff, I got to be in the car with her. I got to be right there beside her, good times, bad times, uphill, downhill, because some truths are just too big.
Mm-hmm.
You can't communicate them with just words. And if I really want her to get it, I got to be in the car. And that's something of what we mean by incarnation. Is that God understood we would never, ever really get it if He didn't come to this planet and live in our midst. If we really want our kids to understand this stuff, to begin to live our values, it has to be through relationships. And I think this is really vital. And you probably have to be a little proactive on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think most parents, when the kids kind of start to disengage, I think the default response of most parents is to pout.
Yeah.
Just go, okay, fine.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. He doesn't want to you don't want to spend time with us, that's fine. You know,
yeah.
Like we're going to smoke him out, you know, in a couple of weeks of not being with us, he's going to come crawling back and say, Dad, this week, me and you, Home Depot, you know. But but the fact of the matter is, even if they withdraw, we need to be proactive, and you have to figure out different ways of doing that. I took my girls to breakfast every other week, one girl one week, one girl the next week. That wouldn't work with every kid.
Boy, that's a dream come true. Anyway, Duffy, we're going to take a short break. We're going to let you. We're going to let you answer your text messages, which sounds like a Nintendo ring, as I can hear that actually. And then when we come back, we'll have one more segment. You're listening to Live the Promise with Susie Larson, except she's not here today. It's Bill Arnold sitting in. Be back in a minute. To Live the Promise, Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson. Glad you've joined us today. We're talking to Duffy Robbins, and Duffy is a youth minister extraordinaire, training youth ministers, working with kids, been doing it for 35 years. And Duffy, I had a caller. You know, I thought there'd be more callers today. That's what I told the station. If we have them on, there'll be a lot of people interested. And
yeah,
of course, I was
yeah.
wrong. Of course, I was wrong.
Maybe something with the phone system.
No, I don't think it is. The phone's working fine.
Yeah.
But a caller did send a message and say teenagers seem today to be so angry. They're yelling at their parents, living with entitlement. Now, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, I think in some ways it's because it's hard to be a kid. And I know everybody's going, oh, you know, wah-wah, everybody knows that. But I do think that you enter into puberty at a much earlier age. And Bill, I know this always makes you feel awkward when we talk about this kind of stuff. But you enter into puberty at an earlier age. And then you kind of enter into what society considers adulthood at a much later age. And so you're living in this kind of no man's land for longer than previous generations had to live there. It's sort of like life on a tightrope. It's just that the stanchions of the tightrope have gotten further apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is that's frustrating. And that's and maybe anger isn't the proper emotion, but you know, you don't always have the. You just know something's not right. Something's just. This is kind of hard. And you know, just to give an example, I mean, you were talking with, you know, about today being the Right to Life March and today and but you know, like if I'm a kid and I go to school, the nurse and I say, hey, I've got a headache. Can I get? I'm a high school student. Can I get an aspirin? They quite likely will go, no, we can't give you that. What, you know, not without your parents' permission. But if I say, can I have a condom, then it's like, well, how many would you like? And so on the one hand, I'm an adult. On the other hand, I'm not an adult. How do I – it's kind of a hurry-up-and-wait – it's a hurry-up-and-wait life that you live as a teenager. And don't get me wrong. I mean, teenagers are just as – you know, just as guilty of this. I mean, you know, if you have teenagers in your house, you know how they will say, you know, I want to stay out later Friday night, and you say, well, you know, I think you need to come in at 11:30. They go, oh my gosh, Mom, like you're so treating me like, you know, I'm a child, like I am like such an adult. And you say, okay, all right, I tell you, you can stay out till midnight. But I want you to remember that Saturday you're going to have to help around the house here. Your dad needs you to do some stuff in the yard. And then all of a sudden he goes, Mom, work on a Saturday? You're treating me like I'm an adult. Let me be a kid, you know. So there is that back and forth confusion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also confusing because they live in a culture where they're being given very little direction. Right and wrong is it's kind of vague. It's like the woman on a quiz show who was asked, you know, which do we need the most, the sun or the moon? And she said, we need the moon the most because it shines at night when it's dark. And during the day when the sun is shining, it's light anyway. And that, I think, is kind of where a lot of kids are, that they're not really sure where the light is coming from. And yet,
you know, parents and school and society seems to be saying, just say this, don't do that. Why would you do this? This is an outrage that you did this. And yet there's really no standard of right and wrong. So that, I think, is a source of frustration. And then the last one is what my buddy Chap Clark refers to as abandonment, that as a culture, we seem to have opted out of parenting and raising our youth. And I don't mean just parents, but I mean in schools, I mean in organized sports. We want them to kind of we want it to be about us. We want to kind of even churches, and I know, you know, we mean well in church, but we say, man, we really got to do something nice for those kids. So let's build a youth building back behind the church. And so what happens is, you know, then the kids come and they're back in that youth building, separated from all the adults that they desperately need if they're gonna grow into healthy, productive people. And again, that's not abandonment necessarily because of anger. I mean, because we don't like teenagers. It's abandonment out of a misplaced affection. It's saying, hey, let's give them their own room, let's give them their own worship service, let's give them their own building, and we'll show them how much we love them. We'll never be with them. and so I think, you know, that abandonment is systemic across the culture in a lot of different ways. We say to kids, you know, hey, you know, if you have unprotected sex, you're going to die. Now, get out there and make good choices. We just don't do much to kind of help them across the tight wire.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the journey across the wire is longer than it's ever been. So, yeah, some of it's definitely entitlement. Some of it's definitely, you know, selfishness. It's all of those things. But I think there are some factors that frustrate us. And then I think, well, lastly, just that it's like Bob Dylan said, everything's broken. It's not just an anger or a disappointment that teenagers feel. All of us have that sense that, you know, things are not the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying what Bob Dylan said instead of singing it. I appreciate that.
Everything is broken. Yeah, no, you're welcome.
Yeah, that kind of breaks the momentum of the show a little bit, but appreciate that anyway. Let's talk about, you know, keeping kids separate from adults, which is a huge mistake. Just mention a little bit about mentorship and how powerful it is when an older person, a little bit more seasoned of a Christian, steps into the life of a young person and how important that is in the context of the youth group and youth ministry.
Yeah, that's really vital. I mean, again, it's amazing how many teenagers don't have that close parent. And one of the ways that our listeners can serve the
There's
Lord
no listeners
serve.
Anymore, Duffy.
Well,
that was
there, I think
that was 50
was
minutes.
Guy.
No, that was 50 minutes ago. We had
okay,
listeners.
Okay, all right, forget it. One of the ways that, hypothetically, if there were a listener they could help is to say, "Yeah, I'm going to plug in the church." And I know people go, "Well, I'm not cool enough, I'm not funny enough, I don't play guitar." You know, my idea of an all-nighter is just sleeping through the whole night without going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. But the idea, I think, among a lot of adults is that the youth group needs chaperones. They don't need chaperones. They need shepherds. They need people who are willing to get in the car with the kids, even though sometimes it's a white-knuckle journey. And sometimes it's awkward, and sometimes they're hard conversations, and sometimes it's scary. But to be in the car with them on the journey, it can have a huge, huge impact. And that being involved in a local church and having some adults who know you, some people think of it as a 5-to-1 rule, 5 adults who actually know a kid. I mean, we'll take time to call them by name, greet them in church, ask them how they're doing, say, "I'm praying for you. How'd that test go? You know, where are you going to go to school? Just how's your week going?" 5-to-1. That is the kind of asset that can really help a teenager make it across that tight wire.
Well, that's been a bunch of great wisdom, Duffy. I so appreciate your work, and I just love you as a friend and a person, and I love the way you have a heart for kids, and you stay constantly engaged in training other youth workers because, boy, I tell you, there's a need out there like we need it more than ever today.
Yeah, no, thanks, Bill. You're right. I mean, in all seriousness, this is such an important beachhead for the church, and you make me laugh a lot, and I like to laugh, but there's such a serious opportunity for ministry, and honestly a serious opportunity for fun working with teenagers.
I agree.
It's a great adventure.
Well, Duffy, thanks so much for being such a great guest on Susie's show, Live the Promise. We're glad you could join us. Thanks very much.
Do you have any Thanks for having me, Bill.
Yeah, you bet.
Great.
You bet. Tomorrow on the program, we have Eric Bergerhoff in the first hour and Bill Farrell in the second. He has a book called The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make. Men are like waffles. Women are like spaghetti. That should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be with you tomorrow, God willing. Thanks so much. Good night and God bless.